Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Monday Morning Marketing. I am your co-host, Elise Glenk of ThinkLink Media.
And I'm John Byrne with the Glenko Media Group.
And you can find me on Twitter at Glenk or Facebook.com/EliseGlenk or EliseGlenk.com or ThinkLinkMedia.com or any of the other sites that we manage.
John? Yeah, I actually was laughing last week when I heard a friend say, I could spend the next 5 minutes talking about all the things that you've done and how to people can reach you, but we'll...
That would be great.
Right. That would be great.
I would love that.
But I am available at, I'm always available on Twitter, I suppose.
Really? How really. Available are you?
Yeah. But my hashtag, no, my my Twitter handle is at John M. Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E.
Right. So we're happy to have you here. Welcome back to everybody from WGN Plus and everybody else who has been streaming this. We actually learned this month that at least 5 of you are listening to us, and we're excited by that.
5 is great, and it's not just my mother.
No, no, it's not. And my mother doesn't actually even know how to use podcasts, so right. It's definitely not her either. What we wanted to talk to you about today is what's going on with paid, owned, and earned media. And if you're in marketing, if you are in content, these are things that you really need to know about. And then we're going to talk about some of the big marketing things that are going on in politics, because politics is nothing much but marketing, I think, these days.
Oy, yes.
Oy, exactly.
Exactly.
All right, well, let's start with some definitions. John, what's paid media?
So paid media, I think the easiest way to define paid media is it's anything that you pay money for. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's a nice tautology there, but basically it's advertising. The most traditional form of paid media is advertising, but it can also include a variety of things, you know, whether that's display advertising or digital advertising.
The PPC stuff.
PPC, absolutely.
Paid per click.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. And then also things that are pay to play.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to talk in a second about earned media, but there's a lot of media organizations out there that exist primarily only to offer pay-to-play opportunities for marketers, and that aren't sort of quote-unquote traditional media places where in order to have your name in a story, you actually have to have a journalist call you and interview you and use you as a source, as opposed to pay-to-play where you get to write whatever it is that you want to say, and it's put into this magazine, website, whatever.
Right. And so then there's owned media. So paid media, owned media, and earned media. So owned media.
Well, owned media is, I mean, owned media used to be very small category. Frankly, before about 10 years ago, owned media would be something like you published a magazine that was only about your company, say, or that it was a specific type of publication. You did something especially for yourself, or you had an email newsletter. Woo, an email newsletter. Hey, we're hip and happening. But now it includes blogs. It includes all of the different types of social and digital media that you push out that you actually control as a company or marketer.
And you may pay for those or you may not pay for those, or you may pay for them in terms of employees that you hire to manage that for you.
Right, exactly.
So there's money that goes out there.
But it's more infrastructure type money.
Correct. And then there's earned media.
Yeah, and earned media is the traditional old media relations, public relations that a lot of people think of. You actually, you know, you have to get mentions the old-fashioned way. You earn them.
But you do, in other words, you do something interesting and noteworthy or newsworthy.
Right.
Hopefully in a positive sort of way that earns
no such thing as bad PR.
Yeah, right. So some people may argue that today since nothing ever dies on the internet.
Right.
But yeah, so earned media is something that you might get for free, but you have probably are putting some money out there to a PR firm,
right.
or
PR manager in-house or something
like
that.
Or it's your own time.
Right.
Right. You're actually out there, you're calling people, or you have to take the time to do the interview when somebody calls you, and you may not like how much you're mentioned, or if you're mentioned at all, or the way that you're mentioned, but this is the free stuff, or
well,
what passes for it.
Right, and there's, you know, I mean, we're not talking orthodoxy here, but there's some crossover, too, potentially, between earned and paid, because you've got a situation where, or even owned, you know, PR Newswire is a good example. Now, PR Newswire is basically a way that you can send out a press release using their services that in terms of distribution to media outlets, but they also offer things that place them on special parts of websites that may or may not be a good thing. I'm not endorsing or not, but...
All of the press release digital push-out kinds of companies now offer that.
Right.
And they'll tell you, for depending on how much you want to pay them, they'll tell you exactly who's picking it up, who puts it out there, provide links to all of that, and then you can take those links, copy and paste them onto your website and go, woohoo, I've got earned media.
Yeah, which that's not really the earned media part of a PR newswire, arguably, because what you're trying to do as a business oftentimes is you're trying to interest a reporter. Now, question, how many reporters are actually reading PR newswire?
How many are left?
Well, that's a good question.
I'm sorry. They're all doing something else now.
Right. Exactly. Well, yeah.
Or they're doing six different things. And what you have to really, the value of what I think a PR agency brings to the forefront today, or having a full-time PR person, is they develop the relationships with whatever reporters are left.
Right.
So if there is an opportunity, they tend to get the call simply because they've ingratiated themselves somehow or made themselves really useful by having the right person with the right quote at the right time so the reporter does as little work as possible.
Yeah, no, it's amazing because, I mean, if you talk to people who are left, so to speak, as journalists, it's like the Left Behind series, I guess.
yes, very sad.
Very sad. But the but someday maybe the second coming's coming. No, anyway, we just totally drifted there.
Yeah.
So,
all right, so we've got paid media, owned media, earned media.
Right.
Now, with each one of these, we've sort of outlined in a very brief way that there's a cost and a benefit ratio that you need to analyze. What is the ROI? Because as we talk about week in and week out on this podcast, you know, everything is ROI today. Everybody wants to know what your return on investment is going to be and how much are you going to spend and what are you going to get back in return? And is that worth it in terms of meeting the company goals? And today, it seems like goals are all about conversion.
Right. And I will say, I mean, in my opinion, you know, if you want to be able to drive literally buying power, I think the only way to do that is with paid media in a specific instance, depending on the type of business that you have. But if you want to drive sales, basically, for conversion's sake, paid media is the way to go because you can do things like offer coupons and stuff.
Right.
I mean, I suppose you can do that. And advertising doesn't have to be in print coupons kind of thing or, you know, Groupon type stuff. I mean, that's a paid media opportunity is to work with Groupon on that. And I think the situation is that...
I have to digress. You mentioned Groupon, and I just heard the funniest story about somebody who... Did you tell me this story?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Haven't heard the story yet.
All right. So... Boy, this will be embarrassing that everybody, all five people who listen to this will be listening to. So I heard this story the other day about a company that did a Groupon. And they decided that they were going to do something that would normally be like $1,000 worth of whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And Groupon got them to offer it for $50.
Oh.
It's like I must have been a personal training of some sort. And it was like a three-day thing that would normally be $1,000, and they got them to do it for $50, with which they only got 25.
Wow.
And they got 1,000 people.
Wow.
So it's going to take them like 3 years to work through these 1,000 people who have signed on to do that project.
Wow.
With them, that three-day whatever
See,
weight training thing it would be.
The power of paid media, conversions, et cetera.
Right.
Right there.
So where is the ROI, though?
Well,
if it takes them 3 years to process the 1,000 people at $25, you know, a person versus 1,000, that's not very much money for 3 years of work.
Well, and I got to say, if it's, you know, it's something like training too. So you may have some people who drop off literally because they couldn't have waited and they wanted to get training earlier. And so, I mean, this is the thing. All three types of media, I think, as a marketer, have their risks and rewards.
Yes.
Right. And so, but specifically to your point about asking on conversions, I do think paid media is still the most traditional, but it's still, I think, the most effective in terms of pushing literal and actual sales. But it's also limiting too, right?
Well, it doesn't give you some of the other things that people use media for.
Absolutely.
Right. So it's not about brand extension.
Exactly.
It's not about messaging.
Right.
It's not about creating an idea in the air that you're then going to push forward. And so there are lots of reasons why you would want to choose something else rather than that.
Right. Or if you're in the professional services area like I am, you know, it's not really possible to use paid advertising to drive demand for lawyers, you know, or accountants. Hey, get your taxes done free. You know, I mean,
yeah, right. No, there, but there is right. So it works better in some areas than others, right? If you're a bankruptcy attorney and you're looking for bankruptcy clients, there are ways to buy that for people who search for help for bankruptcy.
Right.
But if you are looking for a company and you want a $40 billion company as a client, in the healthcare industry, I don't think there's a PPC you could buy for that.
Right. Absolutely. And what you're trying to do too in these types of big time sales or even just relationship selling is that you paid media isn't going to do much for you. Only if it's, you find some way that you think it's advisable to do some sort of like paid profile in a magazine that's a pay to play. And even then, honestly, I mean, I've told clients over the years that, you know, if you get a paid profile in this place, the only real reason to do it and pay it for it is that it creates a piece of collateral that you then can either put on your website or leverage in some other way with some of your other marketing collateral. You know, mail it out to your current clients to show them how great you are kind of stuff. I don't see a lot of value in paid media other than a short-term sales-driven type of situation.
I'm trying to think of where I would disagree with that. I think the only place that you might want to consider it are some of these. And again, you have to look at the ROI and who you're trying to reach. So if you're B2B, this probably wouldn't work. But if you have a consumer-oriented product, and you're going to buy an ad in a local handout that reaches exactly your target, you might want to do that.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And I think, but again, you're trying to look to drive sales. It's like, take realtors. They're sort of in an interesting space because they have both a professional reputation to build.
And they do buy places where they can run these little column things.
Right. And or that, right. And they, and
to show how smart they are.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And on the other hand, they're placing traditional advertisements that show all the houses they have for sale.
Right. I mean, I think the reality is that in a lot of B2B publications that are put out by either nonprofit trade associations or for-profit trade associations, you see opportunities to buy thought leadership opportunities.
Absolutely
right? So I know in some of the credit union, we once had a client that asked us to create some thought leadership in the space that would go into credit, you know, a credit union magazine. I think it was the Federated Credit Union, whatever it is. And so we created a series for them. They bought that. It was an ad, but instead of running an ad for the company, they decided to run these, you know, a word from our president of this division.
Right.
And so they created it as a thought leadership. They definitely paid for it. It was $7,500, so I think over like 6 months. But it drove a huge amount of engagement for them. They wanted to raise these issues that came out in these six pieces, and they wanted people to talk about them.
Right. And it qualitatively was different than, and their call to action, and every type of media should hopefully have some, well, every type of owned and paid media should have some sort of call to action. You won't necessarily get it with earned media all the time.
Well, let's talk about earned media a little bit. So we've talked about paid media. That's the PPC, the ads. We've talked about owned media. Social media is a lot of that today.
Yep.
Earned media, we've talked a little bit more about that. That's where you go out. But how do you spend that money in a smart way? Like, when do you know that it's time to hire a PR firm? When do you know that it's time to engage with a reporter? When should you go to a reporter's conference? So if, let's say, you're in the banking industry, do you go to the American Banker Association conference, pay to go to that, or do you go to the Mortgage Lenders Conference, knowing that there will be journalists there for you to engage with, and will that actually help you?
Right. Well, and again, I go back to, it won't necessarily help you drive sales, but what it will do is start to establish thought leadership and industry expertise, right?
Raise awareness, brand extension.
Exactly. Brand building sometimes. I mean, literally when you don't have much of a brand, you know, or you're brand new, so to speak, or you're sometimes really trying to just redo your brand too. Rebranding can be a part of it. You know, the earned media is really something that is worthwhile because it'll be, you know, like the old shampoo commercial and they told two friends and so on and so on. That's what you're really hoping for. You're not necessarily, and in fact, I mostly advise people is that if you're counting on sales out of that type of effort, don't bother.
Right.
You know, save your money and do something else. If it's sales you want, then you should try and do some advertising as opposed to, you know, if you're looking to build your reputation, build the brand, as we talked about.
Right. And this is a great opportunity if you're doing, you need to do some reputation management, right? So if you buy ads, it's not going to erase negative news about you. But if you create thought leadership opportunities for yourself, even if they're paid thought leadership opportunities, and they're going to turn up on Google, that might help push down negative information.
Right.
And so what you're doing is by, you know, leveraging, pulling one lever, which is sort of paid media, sort of earned media, you're pushing down negative information, which will overall enhance your brand.
Right. And what's interesting too is that the I think Google right now still, and for a long time, has basically bonused, if that's a word, or certainly used earned media as a better arbiter of interest to people in terms of search results. So, I mean, the good news, bad news about that is that if you've had some negative stories in the press or in a recognized news outlet, you're going to have a hard time pushing that down because that is almost constantly going to be at the top of your news results, your search results. But if you have a situation where it's something, you know, some random person is, you know, giving you a hard time on a website or something like that, or your Wikipedia page or whatever, that can actually start to be pushed down by doing some more owned media and trying to get more other earned media too. I mean, the value of earned media really can be in the search results too. I mean, that was one thing we didn't really start talking about at the beginning, but I think out of SEO, of all of those types of media, for genuine search results, earned media is the top.
All right, well.
And there's lots of problems with earned media in terms of trying to get it, because this is the other thing that we talked about.
Well, this is the cost, right?
I mean, right. So back to the cost is, I think, something to really explore too, because I think a lot of people have obviously limited budgets. They figure, well, how much do we have to pay for a PR agency?
Well, they have outsized expectations, right? The expectation is we hire a PR firm, I'm going to be on CNBC every day.
Right, or I'm going to be in the Wall Street Journal.
Right. It's like nothing to get. What do you mean you can't get me in the Wall Street Journal every week? So the expectations about it, and then even if you do get them that kind of high-profile media, the next thing they say to you is, well, I didn't get the results I wanted. Well, did you actually have right-sized expectations or outsized expectations?
Right, right. Well, and it's interesting, too, because my focus is on, too, is that the problem with earned media is that if you're lucky enough to actually get into one of the few still existing media outlets that people value and will turn to for, you know, that quote unquote trust, great. But there ain't a whole lot of left, right? I mean,
right.
You know,
shrinking every day.
Every day. And that has its problems too. So, you know, if you're interviewing PR firms, sometimes you have to be a little careful about them overpromising too.
Absolutely.
Because they're, you know, they're interested in getting business just like everybody else is. I'm not saying that they're dishonest or by any stretch, but they may play into some of a business owner's outsized expectations about what it is they can actually accomplish with earned media.
So now let's talk a little bit about content, because content crosses over all three,
yep.
Right? So
yep.
Paid media, you've got to actually write the ads and they've got to perform. That's considered content. You've got landing page content. So where do they go back to? They go back to the funnel and your landing page. Some companies consider that to be content. I consider that to be sales information. I don't consider that everything content such a big catch-all today.
Right.
But you do have to have specific content for that. Then you've got owned media, so that's blogs and social media, the writing that goes on in those things, or white papers or ebooks or any kind of content that you're creating. That's the kind of content I think of.
Right.
Informative.
Or a Twitter stream sometimes. Right. You know.
And then the earned media, of course, is when people quote you for different stories, or they take the work that you've done and then pretend that it's not yours, it's theirs. And that's earned media.
Yes, I suppose. Of one way or another, right?
One way or another. So, but you have to be aware of, like, you know, one of the things that John and I talk about offline all the time is how marketers really don't have their arms around the three different kinds of content, and that you need probably three different kinds of writers and content generators to really optimize that for your company.
I think that's right. At the very least, if you can't afford to hire three different types of people, you have to understand it's three different types of writing, because you're really dealing with people in three different mindsets. A singular person, your buyer, has three different mindsets when you go to different places. Like when you're reading something in Business Week or on, you know, or listening to something on CNBC in a news, not a bought ad, but a news segment.
Yep.
Your mind is taking that information and filtering it in a different way than, frankly, sitting on Twitter and watching, you know, all these different companies tweet their stuff, whatever that stuff may be. And that's substantially different than just sitting looking at banner ads.
Right. And it's all getting, you know, it's shifting so quickly that if you hire somebody who's an expert in Twitter, you may turn around and find that the top four people of Twitter, Jack Dorsey's fired them, as they did this weekend.
Right.
And is now, you know, moving from 140 characters to 10,000 characters. And the person you hired to do that first, had no idea those changes were happening, and secondly, has no idea how to write something at 10,000 characters that's effective because they've honed their skills at 140 characters.
Right.
Not to say they can't learn it, but things change so quickly.
Well, and maybe not even offered to, some sort of value statement that says we shouldn't be doing that in the first place. Who knows?
I asked that question today because we're talking about a new project we're launching. And they said, well, who is this aimed to? Which is exactly the first question you should ask, right?
Who's your audience?
Is this B2B or is this B2C? Or is this B2B2C? Like, what is this? And
B2B2B2C.
Right. And who are you going for in the first wave? Who are you going for in the second wave? Who are you going for in the third wave? And who should we be engaging? Because each audience has a different tone, has a different reach, has a different message. And getting all of that done is you've got to dissect it and then start to put it together. And so I said to them, is Twitter really the right place for us to be playing? And they said, we're going to evaluate that and let you know.
Well, and
which I thought was also a good answer.
No, that is a good answer, because the only good news about Twitter and some of the other social media channels is that you can test and you can analyze, because the analytics on it are pretty good.
Yeah.
You can see what the level of engagement is depending on what it is you have to do, and you can play with it and see what people... I mean, honestly, email marketing is very effective in that way. And by the way, we didn't mention it, but that's very much owned media, frankly.
It is, and I think newsletters can still be highly effective. I mean, I think you have to really understand what they're looking for. We did a newsletter for a company last month and it had an open rate of 30%.
That's unbelievable.
Which is unbelievable. Right. And the click-through rate was, maybe 10%, which is still unbelievable. But, the sheer numbers drove a significant amount of traffic where we were trying to get it there. They were thrilled with that.
Right.
The month before we weren't as effective.
Right.
You just have to test and change and all
that. Well,
the
nice thing about email is that, email campaigns can be sort of both owned and paid, I suppose. They're still technically owned, but one of the good things you can do with email, and Groupon obviously learned this a million years ago when it first started, is that, man, does it drive sales.
Yeah. Yeah, it can.
It absolutely, because I'm sure those people who bought the $50 gym memberships, they didn't see it on they may have gone to Groupon's site, but chances are it landed in their Gmail account.
Of course it did. All right, so there's probably at least two or three more shows in this topic, but
it's a one that's a really important for a lot of marketers, because I think a lot of marketers struggle with, and business owners in general, where do I put my money?
And you've got to make the business case to your boss, right? Typically, CMOs or marketers, you guys are not the people with the purse strings. So you've got to make the case, the business case. And this is one way to start thinking it through. And then you can go deep and figure out what's going on in your specific industry and who your competitors are and what they're doing. And you go and do some basic research.
Absolutely.
Or you hire us to do it for you.
There you go.
All right, let's move on. We wanted to talk for just a minute about marketing in the restaurant world and what happens when you have a big idea that goes well and then badly, or badly and then well. So the two restaurants we came up with were Chipotle and McDonald's.
Yeah, sort of the yin and yang, I guess, right now of fast food.
So when Chipotle first came out, and by the way, I think McDonald's actually owns an interest in...
Do they? I can't remember.
I think if not, they bought it or they own a piece of it. I don't remember. But anyway, Chipotle, they came up with this whole idea. This is all natural. It's good for you. We're going to produce better quality meat in a better way, and it's going to taste better because it's all like no antibiotics,
made for you as you watch.
And it gets made for you as you watch. So that was really awesome for them. What a great marketing message, right? And then all of a sudden it went south for them when people started getting sick. And now... You saw that today they're going to close all the restaurants.
Yeah, it's been out for a little while. They're doing like a day in February. I don't remember the exact day. Unfortunately, I could look it up, I suppose.
They're going to try to reset.
Yeah, and it's a day that they'll be closed to consumers, but all the employees will be there, because I think they're doing like exactly what you said. They're hitting like Control Alt Delete to show my age.
Right. And starting from scratch and all the rest. All right. So that was a good idea that turned into a terrible idea that they're trying to reset. McDonald's which has had declining sales for the last few years, has had a changeover of CEOs, like two of them or three of them in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yep.
They had a CEO who I think got cancer and died, or had a heart attack, and then they got another one. And you really don't want your CEO, especially when you're a fast food company, dying of a heart attack. That's a bad thing. But they came up with this idea of all-day breakfast. And I think it wasn't actually, people made fun of them.
I think that people were kind of like, yeah, no.
This is not going to work.
This is not going to work. How are you going to, I mean, who wants pancakes at, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon? And which I think in some ways was sort of, was short-sighted because, you know, Denny's and diners have been doing it forever.
Yeah, forever. And meanwhile, it's turned into this wild, raging success. It turns out a lot of people like to eat pancakes, you know, in the afternoon. And good for them.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, I mean, I told you this story. My wife and her mother were sat down at a restaurant, and her mother is old,
very, very old. Right.
But anyway, she sat down, and they kind of fussed, and she never has good luck in restaurants anyway because she's just fussy. And finally, my wife said to her mom, well, what do you want to do? What would you rather do? And her mom looked at her, and this is at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, late lunch. I would rather just go to McDonald's and get an Egg McMuffin. And that's exactly what they ended up doing. And so, I mean, it's funny because I wonder, the breakfast all day, I think, has a certain level of attraction to it. My guess is that it's probably not the whole menu that's really successful, but the various items, probably including the Egg McMuffin, which has been a standout forever, yeah. I'm sure they're doing really well because sometimes you get tired of a hamburger.
Well, and other places are doing breakfast all day as well. Right. So we were at, I was with our COO, Angus, and we went to, I want to say like Corner Bakery or something for lunch. And he had an egg and bacon, of course, because it's Angus, a bacon and egg sandwich.
On
for
a biscuit,
lunch,
probably,
it was like
right?
1 o'clock. No, he had it on toast, I think. Okay. But he's like, "Oh, I could eat eggs all day," and I'm like, "Okay,
we came to the right place."
And I had chicken soup. But the nice thing is that you can kind of get what you want. And this idea that big companies are going to stop telling you when you should be hungry for certain things seems intuitive, but it was really a big idea. And McDonald's, which got bashed for it, is now getting rewarded for it.
Yeah, and they're projecting that's really going to do it. I mean, part of me wonders if there'll be a little bit of a contraction as people may get tired of the novelty of breakfast all day. But I think as a basic staple of their menu, I don't see it going away.
No, I don't think it will either.
By the way, I did look up, McDonald's did own a certain and significant portion of Chipotle at one point in time. But after they went public in the late 2000s, McDonald's, probably much to its regret, does not own. And maybe
I don't know. Maybe
now.
Their happiness. I don't know.
They don't own any of Chipotle.
All right.
But
so
there was
they did
a
buy
significant,
it. I did remember that correctly.
Correctly.
All right.
Yes.
Good for me. All right. Let's talk about politics because this was such
another
a...
Another oi.
Well, this was kind of an interesting week for marketers, right? So we're getting down...
The crazy train has come to town.
Yeah. So next week's the big... I think next week is
next
when
week?
They...
Next week? Tuesday,
yeah,
I think.
Right?
Is it? Tuesday?
Monday? Tuesday. Iowa?
Remember. Iowa.
All right.
We are when I weigh.
It's time for Iowa and then New Hampshire. So Donald Trump and Ted Cruz had kind of become neck and neck. Even though Donald Trump said he was way ahead and Ted Cruz said no, that he was way ahead, Ted Cruz, by all polls, looked like he was polling really, really close.
Right, because Carson had just kind of fallen
off. Carson's fallen off. Right. People are like, he's crazy.
And Marco Rubio keeps trying and plugging away. And Jeb Bush is out in the wind somewhere.
Yeah, and then there's people like Kasich, who's her ex.
Right.
Does anybody even realize he's still running?
Please let me be vice president. Please let me be vice president.
So meanwhile, I think Trump, who is, if nothing, the superior marketing person of the world.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, of that crowd, absolutely.
But like, it's not even a contest, right? I mean, the guy's got his name on buildings all over, you know, everywhere.
Right.
So he must have thought to himself, I need a big idea. And he also doesn't, supposedly his weak spot is the ground game. Like, he supposedly doesn't have a real ground game. So what did he do? He reached out to Sarah Palin.
Yeah, he dug underground, apparently. No, never mind. Sorry.
And
that was unkind.
He pulls in Sarah Palin, who still has a huge groundswell of support. I mean, like, if you love Sarah Palin, you love Sarah
Palin.
She
is definitely a divider, not a uniter.
So he reached out to her, and she reached out to him, and somehow they made a deal, and she gave the endorsement. And the results are...
That sweater was unbelievable. And a marketing genius, though. Memorable.
Right. Yes, it was totally memorable. Drill, baby, drill. And Tina Fey, like, so nailed that on Saturday Night Live. But the point I'm trying to make is that by choosing to have this alliance with Sarah Palin so close to Iowa, where she is really, really strong, and New Hampshire, where she's really strong, particularly with the gun stuff, he is now about 11 points ahead in the polls again. Like all the results that have come up since then have shot him way far ahead of Ted Cruz.
Well, and the timing is obviously right there, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there that was it.
Half of marketing is timing too, right? I mean, you can have the best product in the world, but if you're, you know, taking your time to go to market and somebody else beat you to it, boom, you've lost.
And Ted Cruz was sort of interesting because I guess Sarah Palin has supported him in the past. And he said, well, she's supported me in the past. And if this is where she's going, you know, God's, you know, he didn't want to bash her because you can't really bash her.
Right.
It's a woman. You can't bash her for that. She supported him in the past. If Trump, you know, whatever happens to Trump, let's say he doesn't make it for some reason, you know, he still wants to be able to grab onto her and be able to get her gaggle of supporters, which number quite a lot.
Yeah. Does she qualify now as a true gadfly? Does that even have any meaning anymore?
I don't know
anymore?
If that has any meaning anymore.
But man.
Certainly
I mean,
a carpetbagger. Because
she will never hold, I would predict that she will never hold political office ever again.
Oh my gosh. If Donald Trump puts her in the cabinet, I mean.
Well, but I meant like I get elected to political office.
Oh, elected? I doubt it. But it was really, from a marketing point of view, this was a marketing coup.
Well, and it's one of those things that's sort of like, is it guilt by association type of stuff? You know, I mean, marketing, obviously.
But what was he trying to do? He's not trying to win the election. He's trying to win Iowa and win New Hampshire. And if you want to convince people that you are that brand of politics, Sarah Palin is a very effective way to do it. Because no matter what happens, everybody knows what she stands for.
Yeah. Right. Or they're just so right. I mean,
her brand is her brand. And so if you want that particular follower, all you have to do is align yourself with her. That's how effective her marketing is. And she lent that brand credibility to Trump.
Can we call her the Kim Kardashian of politics? Maybe?
Absolutely.
I mean, in a way, that's really what she's done.
Yeah. No, it's fascinating and scary all at the same time. Right. Whereas with the Kardashians, I don't really feel scared. Well, sometimes I do. But
have you watched Kanye sometimes? Anyway.
Yeah. Anyway.
Rushing the stage.
Well, listen, she's still married to him. That alone is worth the price of
mazel
admission.
Mazel tov. There you go.
Okay. So meanwhile, also in politics, so we've got Donald Trump. Now we've got Bloomberg.
Yeah, talk about earned media, huh?
Right. Donald Trump had plenty of it. And Bloomberg, all he did was say he was thinking about doing an independent run, and the world lit up.
Certainly various parts of the world definitely lit up. Absolutely.
They did, because, you know, you've got a guy who is also a billionaire. So this is kind of interesting. A guy who said, I'll spend $1 billion on my race.
Right.
So now that kind of nullifies Donald Trump saying, I'll spend $1 billion on my race. Because we all know it costs $1 billion to run a race.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we also know that this guy has got Donald Trump down, hands down, for number one, he's been elected to a really important office. Running New York is like running some of the biggest countries in the world.
Absolutely.
You've got a guy who's got tremendous sense of decorum. You know, he's got a very different kind of brand. He's very liberal socially. But yet he's got all the bankers behind him.
Yep.
So an independent run is kind of an interesting thing. And then he said, well, I'm only really going to do it if Bernie Sanders wins.
Right. If it's a Trump-Sanders contest, he'll come in. And then I don't know what the hell is going
on. What would happen?
You know, it's funny. I mean, it's what happened with the Wigs. Did we ever end up with a Whig president? I don't think so.
No, but I
or
could
John
see.
Or John Quincy Adams was a Whig.
But,
I don't know.
But he could suck enough votes away from one side or the other. And it's just unclear which side he would suck it away from, right? There are a lot of Democrats who would vote for Bloomberg, and there are a lot of Republicans who would vote for Bloomberg over a Donald Trump and over a Sanders.
It's interesting, too. He's also a media mogul. Like Trump doesn't have any money. I shouldn't say any money, but most of his money is in real estate and golf and hotels and all that
stuff. Okay, and what does every business journalist do? They have a Bloomberg terminal
Absolutely.
And he has his own network.
And he has got his own magazine. He's got his own
everything.
Blah, blah, blah.
I've got his own magazine in my kitchen.
So do I.
So this kind of instant connection is fascinating. And there's a lot of sort of earned media. He has the connections to continue in the media. He's got the respect, I think, to continue.
Yeah, I think he was a lightning rod in some other ways. I mean, let's face it, everybody who puts himself out there is going to be subject to scrutiny, obviously.
Yep.
I mean, he's not some Latter-day Savior. On the other hand, boy, an interesting figure. Kind of makes you wonder, like, why didn't he, and maybe I just wasn't paying attention, you know, why wasn't he in this race six, eight months ago?
Well, I think the answer is, he didn't see the opening.
Yeah.
Because 6-8 months ago,
it was pretty
Donald
crowded,
Trump was not going to win. Was Donald Trump even in it 6-8 months ago? I think he
I think he was still the. I might have been the. He was sort of like on the. He was definitely at the top half of the heap.
Yeah, but he wasn't. It hadn't gotten this far down the pike.
No.
And Hillary was the presumptive nominee, whom Bloomberg is connected to, and now she's got a real. So, when you have Hillary Clinton versus Donald Trump, it's pretty clear what's going to happen, or what everybody thinks will happen.
Well, and I got to tell you, I mean, everybody was saying 6 to 8 months ago this Trump thing's not going anywhere.
Right. So that clearly was wrong.
Right.
So now you've got a different kind of a situation where he must see or sense an opportunity, and is laying out what I, you know, he's not actually running. He's just laying out the ground rules for what he would do should this other thing happen. And he'll have to do some work and spend some money anyway, even before he officially announces. But he just, it was very interesting as a marketing message. It was like, if these two things happen, I'm going to do something about it.
Well, and the wild card, too, I think, is his media
Yeah, his media empire that he can leverage for this.
Absolutely.
Even if, and as they did
in a way that Steve Forbes could never have, right?
No.
I mean, another sort
it's
of
not
media-ish.
As, it's not as diverse and big. Steve Forbes is
It was essentially a magazine and a little bit of a website, which has gone, I mean, listen, Forbes is great, can be a great site to mosey on and get a lot of business.
It's a great website, and they've done some really smart things.
But it's not Bloomberg.
It's not Bloomberg. Mm-hmm. So fascinating. Anyway, that was This Week in Marketing and Politics.
And media.
And media. And if you haven't watched Tina Fey do her version of Sarah Palin's endorsement of Donald
her
Trump.
Her latest version, yeah.
Her latest version, you must go and watch it because it was a hoot. She's
As
great.
She would say.
I would vote for Tina Fey. I would.
Right.
I like Tina Fey. She's bossy pants.
She is bossy pants.
It's good. So we need, that's what we need, a bossy pants. All right. Well, we're going to run now so we can actually get this up on Monday because it's still Monday. And we're taping this on Monday Morning Marketing. So we hope you'll join us again next week. I'm Elise Glink, ThinkGlink Media. You can find me on Twitter at Glink.
And I'm John Byrne. You can find me on Twitter at John M. Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E. And we are pleased that you have joined us, all of you who are starting to listen on WGN Plus.
Yeah. I should say Thursday afternoons, one or both of us will be doing a little fill-in with Steve Bertrand, sitting in, not a fill-in, but sitting in at 12:50.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch.
On the Wintrust Business Lunch. And then I'll be on Friday mornings with Steve Cochran, so you can listen in for some money advice there.
Sounds good.
All right. See you guys. Have a great week.
Thanks. Take care.